So we've got separation of church and state in this country, right? So does that mean freedom from religion? But then again, our currency says, in God we trust. Good morning and welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Steve Heimel. We have enormous diversity of belief and we seem to be having trouble keeping them all together. If your religion is a part of your morality, how do you deal with that in public life? Our phone number, 1-800-478-8255-478-TALK. Email talk at aprn.org, a local call in Anchorage at 550-8422. How is it we keep forgetting the role of religion in our history on Talk of Alaska statewide?
Today's program is underwritten in part by NMS, building a culture of safety through active caring. More information online at nmsusa.com. If you know an Alaskan struggling to find health insurance because of a pre-existing medical condition, encourage them to talk to a local insurance broker about the new temporary federal insurance program being administered by ACHEA, the Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association. The program is for those with qualifying pre-existing conditions and who have been uninsured for at least 6 months. Talk to an independent insurance broker or go online to ACHIA.com. This message sponsored by ACHEA Fed.
Well, sitting across from me is Dr. Greg Kimura, President and Chief Executive Officer of the Alaska Humanities Forum, but also he's a former chaplain at Alaska Pacific University, and his degree is in the philosophy of religion, a doctorate in the philosophy of religion.
That's right, Steve.
So I can't even conceive of the breadth of that subject area. But the question I have for you is, how is it in America that we have this myopia of forgetting our own religious history, the element of religion that's in our history? Why do you suppose that is?
Well, I don't know if Americans actually forget the importance and the significance of religion in their history. It seems to bubble up all the time in public discourse right now. Hence this wonderful multi-part series on PBS that's showing religion in America. And then, of course, barely a day goes by in the news media where we don't hear some story about religious diversity or conflicts between the church and state. But it really is very deeply woven into American history and into our core documents as well.
Oh, yes. But it seems like we need to be reminded. In other words, it seems like that is the first part about in our history that gets left out. Take, for instance, the area where I come from in northern Pennsylvania, which is right where the slaves were brought across to Lake Ontario to get into Canada through the Underground Railroad. And there is a house in my hometown where they would shelter these slaves, and nobody ever mentioned it. Even these many, many years later, it was only about 8, 9 years ago when they started talking about how this house had once been a way station on the Underground Railroad.
Wow, fascinating story.
Well, the thing is so interesting is that these people were so steeped in this belief, this abolitionism that they espoused as the Yankees that they were. This was such an important thing to them that they were still keeping it secret. Hmm. They were still following a religious path, but it wasn't out in the open at all.
Well, this is one of the issues that is at the core of American civic identity and religious identity, which is where you mentioned separation of church and state, but really it's it goes back to Jefferson even. It's the what is the role of religious faith and religion in larger public discourse? And for many, I don't know which denomination was involved with this Underground Railroad house, but for a lot of Christian denominations, being showy about one's religion is not something that is part of that tradition.
Yes, exactly.
It's steeped in Christian virtues like tolerance of other beliefs, not wanting to offend other people, but not being showy, not being ostentatious, and
it's a kind of a civility thing almost, so that we can all kind of get along. despite our differences of belief, because I'm pretty sure these people were Baptists, and by and large, it's kind of Methodists and Presbyterians and so forth up there in that neck of the woods.
Well, you know, we have this term that philosophers, religion, sociologists of religion use, which is called the Jeffersonian Compromise. America, remember, came out of the tumult and the discord of the wars of religion in Europe, and especially in Britain. And America has handled religious faith differently. We don't have a state religion. We don't have a Church of England, where, by fiat, your clergy are essentially civil servants. We have religious freedom, but what that has meant is that there's a general, or has been, although we continue to come into conflict over exactly where this line lies, a general Jefferson-inspired belief that it's okay to believe individually or personally and practice your religion any way you want to in the private realm, insofar as those personal beliefs don't impact on the larger public civic discourse in life. And it's called the Jeffersonian Compromise, but it's essentially the division or the line between church and state.
Fascinating, and we're going to, I'm sure, get back to it. You know, right now we've got in a situation, though, where there's so much multiculturalism in the country that these, you know, are the big tent that holds us all seems to be busting at the seams. And so we get these weird controversies, which, like, we're having one now. They're calling it the Ground Zero Mosque controversy. How can it even be a controversy if we have freedom of belief? How can there be a controversy about an Islamic cultural center located in Lower Manhattan around the corner from where there was a terrorist attack? But there is.
There is, and I think that there are a number of different layers to that particular controversy. I think that most religious historians would take a look at this as a rather non-controversial, in the sense of a technical term, a religiously trivial. There's no controversy there in the sense that, you know, we're America, we're the United States. We believe in religious pluralism, religious diversity. People can, you know, within the rules and the zoning laws, have houses of worship of any different variety in different places. I think this the other level of this, though, is kind of what you were referring to with your friends and your neighbors who had this house that was part of the Underground Railroad. There's also a deep sense within the United States, amongst all the diversity, of sort of being a sensitive to other issues and being sensitive to our neighbor's belief as well. And that's where this Ground Zero Mosque, or whatever it is called, I think is really running up against a wall. And
the wall that it's running up against?
Well, it's other sensitivities rather than, no one, I think, disputes the fact that this is America and people have a right to do this, but the sensitivities to...
So it's an idea that this is insensitive somehow to build this, not really that it's a matter that they're not really Americans because they're Muslims.
Well, I suspect that there are, you know, I think we need to be honest. I think there is, as much as we are open to diversity and religious pluralism in this country, there is religious and cultural xenophobia as well. I'm mm-hmm. sure that is part of this whole debate too.
Okay.
However, Steve, I want to make this point. The fact that in the United States we are able to have a debate about the appropriateness of building a house of worship in any particular place is a sign that we have a vigorous and healthy religious discourse here, which is not the case in many countries.
Yeah, I will find it, you know, as a radio talk show host, that this is an exceedingly difficult area to explore. And generally speaking, anything involving morality is difficult to talk about because people like to think that that's private.
Well, that's exactly it. But, you know, there are certain things you're never supposed to talk about in polite company. yeah, politics,
sex,
and religion, because that's all to be put in the private sphere, the Jeffersonian public-private division.
Right.
Of course, sex and sexuality have a public dimension. Politics, clearly, have a public dimension, and so does religion. So I suppose we'll have to continue to be impolite.
Yeah, and we have to bring it up. And it is in that context that I introduce our next guest. What's going to happen here is later this week, Mr. Nihad Awad will be here, and he'll be giving a public address at Grant Hall Theater on October 15th at Alaska Pacific University, right where you were chaplain, as a matter of fact. at 7 o'clock at Alaska Pacific University. Nihad Awad is National Executive Director and co-founder of the Council on American-Islamic Relations, and his subject is the Islam you do not learn from cable news. And with us is the Communications Director of that council, Ibrahim Hooper, by telephone from his office in Washington, D.C. Ibrahim, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Thanks for having me.
So the Islam you do not learn from cable news, that's... I think that's a big subject. As someone who's kind of studied Islam a bit, there's an awful lot that is never mentioned on cable news. But the one thing that I think may stand out above all others at this moment is that there is a fatwa against terrorism, against suicide bombing, and against terrorist attacks. In other words, there's a ruling in Islamic law that says you shouldn't do this.
Oh, yeah. I think there are actually a number of those rulings. A number of years ago, we actually helped coordinate a religious ruling, or fatwa, if you want to call it that, by the Fiqh Council, the Jurisprudence Council, Islamic Jurisprudence Council of North America, against terrorism and religious extremism. So there have been a number of these kinds of efforts around the world. And, sometimes they get attention, sometimes they don't. And that's one thing we're concerned about, because often when I go on a program, not necessarily like this, but, more the commercial right-wing radio, the first question is, why don't Muslims condemn terrorism? Well, we do consistently, regularly, but sometimes people don't hear it for one reason or another.
Yes, I remember, and Greg will remember, too, when Reza Aslan was in town, and he explained to us about how the difference between civil law and Islamic law, and the fact that and maybe you can help us with this, Mr. Hooper, that the way he was saying it is, look, we have these things that were revealed to Muhammad, and they're kept in the Quran, and the Quran has a special status because of that. And then it is interpreted, and there's many layers of interpretation. And beyond that, there's even the records of all the things that were said that are not in the Quran and all the things that happened. It's kind of like if you were looking at the New Testament, the Acts of the Apostles.
The new boogeyman of the right wing is so-called Sharia law, and they like to make you think that there's some book that on the cover says Sharia law. There's no such thing. I mean, Sharia law is the compilation of precedent in various schools of thought and various trends within the Muslim world over 1,400 years based on the Quran, Islam's revealed text, the traditions of the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, and various scholarly rulings over the centuries. It's a very fluid and flexible system of belief, and it covers everything from, how you pray, how you get married, every little thing in life, just the same way that Jewish law or Catholic religious law does. So, but unfortunately, we have a whole Islamophobia industry trying to create hot-button terms to demonize Islam and marginalize American Muslims.
Well, at this point, I think I'd like to put out the telephone number 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-TALK, a local call in Anchorage at 550-8422, and email is talk@aprn.org if you want to communicate that way. And we've got Dr. Greg Kimura of the Alaska Humanities Forum and Ibrahim Hooper of the Council on American Islamic Relations. It's pretty clear we're kind of going in a ecumenical direction here, multidimensional, multi-denominational dimension here. But I want to pin you down a little bit more, Mr. Hooper, because it seems to me that people do feel bound by Islamic law. I mean, that seems to be really kind of a part of it. I mean, if I, you know, I grew up Presbyterian, and I still am a member of a Presbyterian church, and I can't say that I feel exactly bound by some of the things that the whatever Presbytery puts out and all that.
By the way, I grew up Presbyterian.
yeah, interesting, very interesting.
No, but I mean, Muslims are bound by Islamic law the same way Jewish people follow Jewish law, same way Catholics follow Catholic law. Some follow, some don't. Some have their own opinions, and you know, it's the same kind of thing.
Yeah.
But what the Muslim bashers out there take advantage of is that there's very little knowledge about this kind of thing and about Islam and Muslims in the general public. So, and given the violent incidents that are somehow falsely claimed to be done, in the name of Islam around the world, you know, people are vulnerable to thinking, oh, well, you know, maybe you're right. Maybe, you know, it is all based on Islam. In fact, if you look at a book that just came out within the last few days called Cutting the Fuse by Professor Pape at the University of Chicago, he and his colleague analyzed every act of suicide terrorism since 1980 and looked at the motivation for each act, and they found that almost in each and every case, the motivation was foreign occupation, not religion, which is completely counterintuitive and revolutionary in terms of what we've been told over the years.
Yeah, it is, definitely. Well, I remember, and I think how could any of us not remember the bafflement after the 9/11 attack? Why? You know? And I think the question really is still being asked without answer. Why do they hate us? And do they hate us, or who do they hate? Do they hate world finance?
Well, Professor Pape would say that they hate foreign occupation.
Yeah. Yeah, and as I understand, and it's rarely brought up, there was something about the fact that American troops had actually been allowed into Mecca or into Saudi Arabia or something like that, that it kind of got Bin Laden upset.
Well, yeah, that was one of the main things that was brought up, you know, American troops in Saudi Arabia, you know. So that goes completely into Professor Pape's thesis.
Yeah, so in a sense, that was viewed as an occupation. Now, you see, this is a very hard, yeah, for from a secular point of view, for an American military strategist to see that, to see why that would be taken as an insult.
Yeah.
And so then maybe we can also look once again back at this Islamic Cultural Center right down there around the corner at Park 51, and you could see, you know, maybe some are taking that as an insult too.
Oh, I mean, that whole Park 51 situation was completely manufactured out of whole cloth.
Wow.
By Muslim bashers, and you can even trace it. In fact, if you look at Sunday's New York Times, they did a big profile of this Pamela Geller, probably the leading Islamophobe in America right now, head of Stop the Islamization of America. And they trace how she and her colleague, another Muslim basher, Robert Spencer, brought this whole manufactured issue forward with the assistance of the right-wing New York Post. So you can trace it day by day how it filtered from hate blogs to the mainstream media.
This is just plain scary.
Yep.
I mean, just speaking as a person in the journalism business, I don't even know how to deal with this. I don't even know how to deal with it on a talk show. Should I call up the Islamophobes now and, you know, get them to explain their side? I just don't know.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately,
Steve, Greg, go ahead.
I'm going to want to gently disagree with Mr. Hooper in this sense. I was just down in New York a couple weeks ago and talking with some colleagues who are involved with a couple of the universities there. And it's clear that the experience of 9/11 for New Yorkers is very different than it is for folks around elsewhere in the country. And it's my understanding that close to 50% of New Yorkers that have been polled have really mixed feelings about this. And I want to just clarify the fact that it's okay to disagree with the Park 51 center being developed there and not be and not be called an Islamophobe, that there are people...
No, but the whole point is, if you're asked... the question that the Muslim basher asks, do you want a victory mega mosque on ground zero? People are going to say no. But if you say, should Muslims be able to build an Islamic community center that will have a prayer space in it along with a pool and classrooms and, you know, all of these things that any community center has several blocks away from ground zero where you can't even see ground zero from the building? Is that okay? Then they go, yeah. That's my point in that it's a manufactured controversy. Just because you're able to gin up opposition to it using falsehoods and misinformation doesn't make it inherently controversial.
Well, again, I'm going to have to gently disagree with you there. I am in support of the Park 51 project. I think it's an appropriate development, but I also appreciate the fact that there may be people who have opposing views to that who are not Islamophobes. And
well, yeah, I would agree with you on that, but the problem is the controversy was generated by Islamophobes exploiting the legitimate emotions of generated by the 9/11 terror attacks.
Oh,
so the
boy.
Emotions are legitimate, but they've been exploited by this vocal minority of Islamophobes.
Right. Yeah, I'm getting your point. The subject is religion, belief in America, belief in Alaska, and it's Talk of Alaska. I'm Steve Heimel, and it's a fascinating conversation. We're just getting rolling here. 1-800-478-8255. If you're in Anchorage, it's a local call at 550-8422, and our email is talk@APRN.org, and they're already coming in. And let's go ahead and pull in one of the callers here. Kaylee joins the program from Anchorage. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Kaylee.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I actually have two things now. I have to agree with your guest when he says that this is completely, this whole rage is so manufactured. If they wanted to build an NRA next to, or in Oklahoma City by where Timothy McVeigh did the Oklahoma City bombing, no one would have a problem with that, even though he was a card-carrying member of the NRA. This is completely generated by people who are afraid of a religion, which actually ties into my original comment, which is when terrorist attacks are done in the name of Islam, Americans, not all Americans absolutely, but Islamophobes blame the entire Islamic religion. And anyone who's done any research knows that one of the five pillars of Islam is peace. This is not an entirely religious thing. You know, if a abortion doctor is murdered in the name of Christ because what he's doing is anti-Christian, and it's done by, you know, a fundamentalist, you know, right-wing Christian group, Christians and Americans go, oh, well, they were just crazy. Oh, well, they went off the deep end. But if it's done in the name of Islam by a right-wing fundamentalist group, it's all Muslims. It's all people who practice Islam. And
yeah, but listen to me, Kaylee.
It's hypocritical and a cop-out.
Yeah, but Kaylee, actually, I'm not sure that the abortion zealots are crazy. Are you?
I don't think that doctors should be murdered for performing abortions. I'm personally pro-life. I believe that life begins at conception, but at the same time, murder in the name of Christ goes against one of the Ten Commandments.
But if something is such anathema to you that you feel that you must do whatever is necessary to stop it, you're compelled, in other words, morally by your belief, It's kind of hard to, exactly where that line is, kind of hard to find, maybe, don't you think?
Yeah, but I feel like that's now contradicting what was said previously, because then if these people who are Muslims are doing this because they feel they are compelled, because what is happening is so against what they believe, then are they not also justified?
Yeah. Yeah, I know. And I don't think ultimately we ever get to an answer for that. Do you think, Dr. Kimura, we ever really get to the ultimate answer where you can draw the line between what a person's belief compels them to do and what is right or what is wrong?
Well, this is, you know, matters of individual conscience. And I think we need to step back here, too. And when we talk about religion, we're talking the major world religions, where even in this conversation, we're generalizing to a large degree. Most people of the world's major religions are what we would consider moderate, rational, and reasonable people.
It takes a whole lot to get a Buddhist riled up.
But the only time, well, unless you're in Sri Lanka, right?
Uh-huh. That's right.
All right. The point being that even a religion like Buddhism has its fanatics. Every major world religion does. And as we were talking before the show started, the only time that the media tends to cover religion is when a large crisis occurs that has a religious dimension, or when a fanatic takes the microphone and claims the mantle for a religion. And this is something that I think is unhealthy in our civic discourse as well.
Well, then we seem to be getting kind of a lot of common ground here, which is essentially that these are really the exceptions. And that's what you're saying, yeah. Ibrahim Hooper.
Let me give you a couple examples. A splinter faction of the IRA recently set off a bomb in Northern Ireland. Now, nobody in their right mind is going to say, well, they're Catholic and they're based on, you know, defending the Catholic community, therefore Catholicism is at the core of that. Because you know what Catholicism is, and you know it's not saying go out and bomb a pub in Northern Ireland. The problem is when some Muslim does something and falsely claims to do it in the name of Islam, you don't know that much about Islam and Muslims, so you're more likely to go, well, maybe he's right, maybe he is doing it in his faith. Also, I would check out Media Matters for America. It's the media analysis website. Their current headline item is about a guy named Byron Williams, a 45-year-old guy who went on a shooting spree out in California, and he was calling himself the progressive hunter.
Yeah.
And, you know, how that ties into the whole Glenn Beck thing, and, you know, is Glenn Beck, you know, an influence that drives these people to these kinds of things? So, you know, there's all kinds of things out there that aren't tied to Islam and Muslims, but unfortunately, it seems that when Muslims are involved, it gets the headline. We got another example down in Florida, in Jacksonville, Florida, in May. A bomb was set off at a mosque in Jacksonville. Not one national media outlet covered it. Only local media covered it. Can you imagine if it had been the other way around, where a Muslim had, God forbid, set off something at another person's house of worship? It would have been international headlines for weeks.
Yeah.
And there's a further dimension, and I want to bounce this idea off of Mr. Hooper as well. Back in 2006, when the community of Anchorage, under the leadership of the Catholic chair of religious thought over at APU, put on the Engaging Muslims Project. We found there was a group of folks who were sort of on the steering committee, and we found, you know, we wanted to have a conversation, learn more about our Muslim neighbors here in Anchorage. We found, though, that a very interesting phenomenon, that after 9/11, most of the moderate Muslims felt really attacked over the public airways and so forth. So they actually didn't want to necessarily draw attention to their community. Folks wanted to keep their heads low. Yet at the same time, I think there was a need within our particular community up here in Alaska to learn more about our neighbors. And so there was this tension.
We even have situations where there's hate crimes committed against, say, a mosque, you know, vandalized or whatever, and we learn about it, and we call the officials of the mosque and say, you know, we want to go public, contact the FBI. Oh, no, don't do it. We don't want to make waves. If we just ignore it, it might not happen again. And we're saying, no, it's just the opposite. You've got to let these things be known.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, Ibrahim Hooper, I understand you really have to leave now, and I want to thank you for being with us. But I can suddenly understand why you're constantly, you're kind of the Anti-Defamation League.
Exactly.
And you're the one that gets all the phone calls.
In fact, while I've been talking to you, I've had to pass up about six. So.
Well, I understand that you got a colossal press of business, but I really did enjoy your participation in our conversation today.
Thank you.
Our subject is belief in America and Alaska, and Talk of Alaska will continue momentarily.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from First National Bank Alaska, working shoulder to shoulder with Alaskan businesses for nearly a century. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Hello, I'm Peter Kenyon, NPR foreign correspondent and former APRN reporter. Help support APRN's news mission by joining me on October 24th for the first of the new APRN speaker series. Go to APRN.org to reserve your ticket today.
If you are compelled by religion, if your religion tells you how to act, at what point do you become not a member of the civil society? We're talking about belief in America and Alaska. PBS is doing a series on religion in America. And we had a fascinating discussion here momentarily with Ibrahim Hooper of the Council on American Islamic Relations, kind of the Anti-Defamation League for Islam in America. And indeed, that head of that organization, Nihad Awad, will be speaking in Anchorage on Friday. The subject, the Islam you do not learn from cable news, if you'd like to go. There's a World Affairs Council speech at noon and then one in the evening at APU. I think you got to pay for the World Affairs one, but the one at APU, Alaska Pacific University, is for free. And I keep thinking back to the Civil War because, of course, we all study the Civil War in history. And, I brought up before my neck of the woods down in the lower 48 where the Underground Railroad ran through and where many of the men, a huge part of that one generation died in the Civil War, and the place was run by women for a while. And they were just, it's hard for me to conceive of such fervor of belief. And then I find out the whole part of New York State between northern Pennsylvania, where I lived, and Lake Ontario was swept by this huge religious fervor in about 1817. It's called the Great Awakening, the Second Great Awakening. And literally entire communities gave themselves over to God. And yet, how can I be learning about stuff like this so late in life? Why is this not just part of our regular history? It's as if we have sanitized belief out of our history. We have sanitized, for instance, the way that Thomas Jefferson, who originated the compromise that Dr. Kimura has been talking to us about, was excoriated in the press at the time as an atheist for his belief in religious tolerance, let's say.
Well, he was a deist himself, so it's not as though you can have one position and be disinterested or neutral. He had a particular theological position, and it was where faith fits in American civic life, and for him, it fits largely in the private sphere, and it does fit in the public sphere only insofar as those religious beliefs don't impinge upon the larger democratic principles under which the country operates. Now, that is a theological viewpoint as well. And so where that line between the public and private sphere, where civil religion, civic religion, and private religion exist is constantly moving. It's constantly moving in recognize this in the courts. It's on the local level, and you see from time to time these cycles of renewed religious interest in the history of the United States. I mean, the United States was in some historical readings founded as a republic for to avoid what happened in Europe. Of wars of religion and so forth. Going to be different. There's a myth to that as well. I mean, it was actually originally put together as a group of Anglican colonies. So even if you go into Puritanical New England, the oldest churches there are Church of England churches. So But they were also, open up to other minority religions as well.
Yes. Well, one of my ancestors was Roger Williams, who was basically either kicked out or either kicked out of Boston or left on his own accord because he wanted to entrust himself to Providence, kind of like St. Francis of Assisi. So he then established his own place, Providence, which became the state of Rhode Island.
And Rhode Island ended up becoming, affiliated with Baptist faith, Maryland, Roman Catholic.
Right, and then, of course, the Quakers in Pennsylvania.
Quakers in Pennsylvania, the Puritans, up and down New England. Each in their own way, this was another sort of compromise, intolerant, perhaps.
But when I researched, so I learned this about Roger Williams and Rhode Island in history, but what I didn't learn is how weird their beliefs were back then and why these people were so marginalized to these Baptists and so forth in England or wherever they were, sometimes fleeing from one country to another. You had one part of the Low Countries that was Catholic and the other part was Protestant, and this all had to do with the Reformation and then the Counter-Reformation, and then it was complicated by a whole lot of stuff involving money and Spain and gold and whatnot. But nonetheless, there was still this big belief thing. And then there was England that was sort of, but not really, a shelter for some of this. And then next thing you know, they're not even accepted there. And they have this belief that they've read the scripture close enough that they are experiencing personal revelations and that people got to get right with God. And that's just the way it's going to be. And so they took that over to the new continent.
Absolutely. And anyone who's done a backpacking tour through Europe will see the graffiti and on some of the old cathedrals and, broken stained glass. And you understand that, that was the Puritans, and that's why they were happy to send them over to the United States, what became the U.S.
Yeah, and it's just fascinating to me belief parts, these really colorful parts, are the parts, the very parts that get left out, and then they're the very parts that later on give us trouble again, and we're all act astonished. How come everybody's a fanatic all of a sudden? Oh, well, they were, 30 years ago, they were fanatics,
Steve, the history of the United States is the history of religious thought in the New World, and we are not very well educated in this in the United States.
Right.
And so when conflicts come up now, people wonder why this is the case. Well, it's always been the case in the United States. And, we need to educate ourselves a little bit more. We need to become more comfortable with the different and differing beliefs of our neighbors as well.
Yeah, I don't think we get there. We don't talk it out either. That's the way I feel about it. Talk of Alaska, 1-800-478-8255. We got plenty of calls. A local call in Anchorage at 550-8422. Email talk@aprn.org. And we'll go to Abdullah here in Anchorage. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Abdullah.
Yeah, hello. Assalamu alaikum, brother. And I'm calling here from Anchorage, Alaska. And I'm just, I'm a Muslim, by the way, from the Gambia in Africa. What I feel to hear from the your speakers are, the Islamic is hijacked by some people who doesn't really really believe in Islam, and they just have their own ideas. And most of the things, the problems, what I've seen is the culture, people from different culture and belief in Islam may interpret them differently, and they act with their own culture and belief, and that's why we're having these problems. And if you really want to know about Islam, just go and read the Holy Quran. And if you don't know, come and get a scholar. Oh, there's a lot of information out there that you will know most of the things what you need to know. But if you hear this from the news and everything, the negativity, that brings so many clouds, the darkness, that, you know, and I think the media contribute most of the, you know, problems on this, you know, people who are Islamophobia on it, you know. And that's my comment. And if the, that brother who is on the line, doctor, I don't know his name, he can relate to what I just said if I said anything that is not right or wrong, you know.
All right, yeah, Ibrahim is off of the phone now. He had to go on to other interviews. There's a lot of demand for him.
Oh, okay, yeah, because when I realized, you know, most of the things when I talk to Islam, the brothers, and some of the problems what I see in fact, on my own brothers, Muslim brothers over here, you know, they interpret the religion in a different ways, and sometimes you question them, they don't have no base on it, you know. And like, for instance, one time someone came and said, oh, you don't have to take pictures. I said, what's the reason? Oh, it's haram. I said, what do you mean it's haram? Do you have an ID card? He said, yeah, and you take a picture. If it's haram, you don't need an ID card. And that's kind of controversy in another way, you know. And those are the problems that we face. And sometimes it's just a matter of understanding that, you know, there's good people, there's bad people. And some people, they're bad, and they just use the Islam and hijack it and do their evil things. That doesn't mean like Islam is, you know, Islam, in Islam, what I understand is if you commit suicide in Islam, you're going to hell. You know, if you kill somebody without, you know, defensive, self-defense in a way, but kill somebody, you're going to hell. And, if, you know, these are things that Islam takes, and you forgive and help your neighbor and love your neighbor. Even like the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, peace be upon him, and he said it, you know, there's one ayah, they said, you know, you will not believe what I believe. And I know that you will believe what I believe. But let you live with your religion, let me live with my religion. If the Prophet says that, and who I am to condemn other religion or what you believe? You know, this is my comment, and thank you very much.
Thank you, Abdullah. Thank you very much. It's Talk of Alaska, Belief in America and Alaska is the subject, and we're joined now by Reverend Wayne Lavender, director of Passing the Peace, which we're going to find out what it is, and author of Counting Ants While the Elephants March By, Thoughts on Church and State, Poverty and Terrorism, War and Peace. Reverend Lavender, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Thank you, Steve. Good morning.
Yes, well, I'm so glad you could join us, and I want you to explain this project that Passing the Peace is involved in with the Qurans.
Well, yeah, this summer, my son and I were together talking about Pastor Jones in Florida, who had planned to burn Qurans, as you all know, on September 11th. And we began talking about how reckless that was, how hate-filled, and how that could be a spark of just negativity. And we said, what can we do to combat that? And we ended up going different ways, and I thought about it, and I said, for every Quran he plans to build, my goal would be to give a Quran to a church so that church could have a Quran, put it in its church library as both a symbol of peace and understanding between faiths and also as a vehicle in which education and understanding could take place. So I've been able to partner with International Institute of Islamic Thought, who have gifted me with 50 Qurans. And these 50 Qurans have been sent all around the country to United Methodist churches. And I have requests for many more, and I'm going to be trying to get more Qurans to give them to churches so we can begin this dialogue or continue this interfaith dialogue that's very necessary in our nation at this time.
That's so interesting, and it's so creative. Because, you know, we've been talking about kind of this business of kind of almost placing down a mark. In other words, that American troops go into Saudi Arabia, and this is viewed as such an insult then that by golly, terrorists are ordered to attack the World Trade Center, maybe. And then Then the World Trade Center falls down, and there's a move to set up a cultural, an Islamic cultural center around the corner from it, and people view that as somebody like stomping in their face and insulting and so forth. And so once again, here is a minister who decides he's going to deliberately commit an insult, and your response is not to slap back, but try and do something out of love and generosity and sharing.
Yeah, correct. The future has many different paths. We could head towards a clash of civilization. We could head towards World War III. We have all the pieces in part to do that. We have all the weapons. Everybody around the world has been armed. But my thought is we also have an opportunity to choose peace. We have an opportunity to choose cooperation and collaboration and really look at what the issues are that are facing humanity at the beginning of the 21st century, which I believe include global warming, pandemic poverty, all the weapons around the world. These are huge problems. Being of different religions, different races, different colors, different economic backgrounds, those are really trivial issues that separate humanity. And so I've always believed that if enough good people do nothing, the forces of evil will prevail and will head towards war and violence. But if the good people, if the people let their light shine, we can move towards a future of peace and justice on a global scale where we can fight injustice and we can seek justice and make the world better.
You know, let me run this by you. There is now in some revival sects the notion that environmentalism is actually a form of nature worship and that it is a devil worship and evil. I'm wondering if maybe there does need to be something between the sacredness of creation and belief that needs to be linked up, because they said it was devil worship. All the native beliefs that were close to nature too. The missionary said that, and then that's caused all sorts of damage.
Sure. Well, we used to burn witches in our nation as well. The United States, the people of the United States are not doing well recently in terms of tests. I'm sure you saw last week a poll came out that 2/3 of the United States population could not name a single Supreme Court justice. And the Pew Research Center recently did 15 questions about religion and faith around the country. And the majority of people they asked were unable to answer half of very simple, basic questions. So I'm not surprised that there's cults and segments of Christianity and other religions that see that environmentalism is devil worship or something like that. It's difficult for me to hear that. It's not what I want to hear, but I see it, and it's difficult for me to understand that. But we need to address that with truth, with education, with facts, and see the connection and defend creation in this very critical time in human and world development.
Thank you, Reverend Wayne Lavender. I think I'm going to have to read your book, Counting Ants While the Elephants March By.
I'll send you a copy.
I would really appreciate that. And, what's interesting to me here is this business of that you don't have to, it's not always condemning. you can also uphold. I think we'll take a break here and be right back as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company, Elks National Foundation, in conjunction with the Alaska State Elks Association and local lodges, is offering the Most Valuable Student MVS Scholarship for high school seniors. These scholarships are awarded to graduating high school seniors through a local, state, and national competition and are based on scholarship, leadership, and financial need. Information and applications available at elks.org/ENF. Application deadline is December 1st, 2010. This message sponsored by the Alaska Elks Association.
Well, what I meant was, Wayne Lavender, that you mentioned that these cults can spring up out of ignorance. And, you know, I'm not talking, you know, superstition and all that sort of thing. But I am saying that there, in an absence of any sort of religious literacy, in a time when people have no idea what theology is, have no idea what dominionism is, have no idea why there was a Reformation, have no idea of the difference between an institution telling you how to act and your own conscience telling you how to act, and how these all play into our history, that I think we repeatedly get preyed upon by weird cults, you know, and they come in cycles. They keep coming back over and over and over again. And when you really analyze it, culturally, you start seeing it's the same thing over and over again, whether it's Billy Sunday or Cotton Mather or whoever. They're really spreading the same sort of thing. And it's kind of intolerance of others.
I think that all of us as human beings search for meaning in life. We want to know if there's a purpose to our being here on planet Earth. We want to know if there's a God. We want to know if there's an afterlife. We want to know if we're supposed to be doing something good or bad. And so we're searching for answers. And a lot of people searching are needy people. And I've always been concerned that the clergy of whatever denomination, the people who seem to have the most answers, the ones who will tell you, this is the way it is and this is the way you need to lead your life, they're the ones, to me, who seem to have the least answers. My son took me to a concert this summer, and we saw Michael Franti. And he sang a song, and he said, "The more I see, the less I know." And I love that lyric. I don't know if it's completely true, but it's, you know, it's kind of symbolic, that the more we learn about the world, the more we understand that there's mysteries, there's paradoxes, there's the unknown. We can study, we can learn as much as we want, but if a pastor stands up, or bishop, anyone, and tells me, this is what you've got to believe, this is what you've got to do, I pretty much know that person is not right. So I want to search and seek these answers to life's meanings myself and struggle with these answers and wrestle with it. That's where I think true faith takes place.
Dr. Kimura, I can see you squirming there.
Well, no, this is... Reverend Lavender has hit the nail on the head here. I mean, it goes back. In fact, Michael Franti might have said it. Socrates said it as well, but it could have been any of the Old Testament prophets. We believe, whether you are Jewish, Christian, or Muslim, that there is that only God knows the mind of God. Only God's knowledge is absolute, which ultimately relativizes any sort of human knowledge. The person who stands up and says, "God said it, I believe it, that settles it," is actually violating a principal belief of the Christian faith. Nobody knows the mind of God but God. So this requires intellectual humility on the part of the believer, and it requires every believer then also to be an open seeker of the truth, to engage our neighbors, and to be much more modest in what our truth claims are.
Fascinating. Let's go to Robert. Joins the program from Anchorage. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Robert.
Hello. First, I want to straighten you out on Rhode Island. Rhode Island was ruled by Quakers for the first 100 years of its existence, so it wasn't Roger Williams was Baptist, but it was settled by predominantly by Quakers who moved over from Pennsylvania and couldn't go into Massachusetts. The other thing that I'd like to raise is astonishment that Steve Heimel, so knowledgeable as he seems to be, didn't know that the principal reason for the attack of 9/11 was the view of bin Laden and his group that stationing troops in Saudi Arabia, that the United States was occupying the Holy Land. And that is hardly an insane belief when you look at where our troops are located, our close alliance with Israel, our picking fights with another Muslim country, namely Iran, and our deep financial interests and energy interests in the Middle East because of oil. It looks to people who live there, and I think with considerable reason, that the United States is moving in on Islam and wishes to take it over. And when we got to Riyadh, then they said, basta, that's enough. They blew up our troops in Saudi Arabia and forced Reagan to take them out. And then they started plotting an attack on the United States in retaliation for our moves in the Middle East.
Wow.
And, I mean, that's...
All right.
The world knows that, even if you don't.
Yeah, Robert. I did find out later on, but on that particular day, that nobody brought it up to me until a couple of days later. And I didn't see it in any news accounts either, Robert. But
right. No, because our news sources are so careful to avoid offending the certain sort of orthodox positions that are put out by our government and by other groups, that these views simply are verboten. They simply don't get on the air.
Okay, we're out of time, Robert, so you're going to be off the air too, but thanks. Thanks for your call. I appreciate it. Wayne Lavender, it has been an inspiration, and I look forward to reading your book.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah. Anything you want to add here? We got another 30 seconds or so.
Well, I want to add, this is Greg Kimura here, Steve, that I'm very appreciative, and I think people in Alaska are appreciative that you're opening a forum here where we can, for lack of a better way of putting it, talk about religion moderately.
Yeah.
So it's so infrequent that mainline and moderate voices on religion actually get any play in the media. The media seems to be much more interested in the controversies, the Fred Phelps and so forth. And it's those voices that tend to hijack the more moderate voices of all the world's main world religions.
Well, all right, then. We'll just do it again, then. Wayne Lavender, thank you very much.
Thanks again.
You don't get the last word after all, except to say goodbye. Thanks again to Ibrahim Hooper and Dr. Greg Kimura. Talk of Alaska coming up goes back into politics next time around. Tuesday, we got Ethan Berkowitz. And Thursday, Harry Crawford. Oh, yeah, Joe Miller coming up and the rest of them. So long now.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by Condor Airlines, with connecting flights from Barrow, Bethel, Juneau, Kodiak, Nome, and Prudhoe Bay to Anchorage on Alaska Airlines, and continuing nonstop service to Frankfurt. Details at condor.com. The Federal Aviation Administration sets rules for the operation of aircraft in airports and provides services to the flying public. Passengers are influential in making flying safer in Alaska, and when passengers know their rights and responsibilities, aviation is safer for everyone. There's more information online at faa.gov/go/flyalaska or toll-free at 1-866-357-4704. This message sponsored by the FAA. Views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at aprn.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.